When Jesus began his ministry, much of Israel was ruled by a king named Herod Antipas. And although his name was Herod Antipas, we might as well call him Herod Junior, because just like his father, Herod, who had sought to claim the life of Jesus as an infant, Herod Junior was so insecure in his rule that he would crack down hard on anyone who even appeared to be undermining his kingdom. So, when Herod Jr. heard that there was a man named John the Baptizer who was preaching down by the Jordan River, preaching that the kingdom of heaven was coming, and that the kingdom of Herod was going to come to an end, well, Herod Jr. did not take this news very well. There's going to be a new kingdom, huh? We'll just see about that. Herod Jr. sent his armed men down to the River Jordan and arrested John right then and there and dragged him off to a prison cell from which he would never leave alive. John the Baptizer lost his life because he dared to challenge the kingdom as it was. He dared to say that the world did not have to be this way anymore, that a new kingdom was possible, that the kingdom of heaven had come near. He lost his life. It's dangerous business trying to change the world. And that brings us to our reading for today. It's from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, which begins like this. When Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew to Galilee, and from that time began to proclaim, "The kingdom of heaven has come near." Listen to that again. We read this today, as we do every week, from the New Revised Standard Version. Listen to the words that it uses. When Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew to Galilee. He withdrew. Now, this makes it sound as if Jesus were retreating to Galilee, headed away from the powers that had arrested John and into safe territory. Jesus was from Galilee, after all. He grew up there, so Galilee might seem to be home turf, a safe place for him to begin ministry where he knew the lay of the land. It might seem as if Jesus was headed to safety. But do you know what part of the country of Israel was the center of Herod Antipas' territory? Do you know what part of the country Herod Jr. had the tightest grip on? Galilee. Galilee was the very heart of Herod Jr.'s power. Jesus wasn't headed into safety. He was headed into danger. Jesus was headed straight into the heart of Herod Jr.'s kingdom, and he started preaching the very same message that had gotten John the Baptizer arrested. The very same message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. It's dangerous business trying to change the world. It's dangerous business talking this way, that the old kingdom, the old ways of doing things are passing away and that something new is coming. It's dangerous business talking that way. And Jesus was doing a lot more than just talking. Jesus was doing recruiting. He was calling people to follow him, to no longer follow along with and abide by the rules and regulations of the kingdom of Herod Jr., but instead to live as a part of the kingdom of heaven, to live according to different values, different laws, different modes of being, to ascribe and become a part of a new kingdom. This is This is sedition that Jesus is preaching. This is treason. He's telling people to abandon the kingdom of Herod, to abandon their loyalty to the king. This is treason. And the people who heard Jesus preach there in Galilee, they knew it. They knew that what Jesus was saying was treason. They were not stupid. They understood full well what kind of man Herod Jr. was. They knew just what kind of king ruled their lives. So, Jesus heads down to the dockside Sea of Galilee way to find some recruits. He was approaching fishermen, people who had steady and secure jobs. They weren't getting rich, but neither were they going hungry either. Jesus approached these fishermen. He was a man that they had never met and about whom they knew nothing except that what he was preaching was dangerous. They knew that much about him. Jesus mouthed no assurances of their safety. He gave them no stirring speeches promising success. He offered no flattering or sycophantic explanations as to why they, of all people in the world, should be called to be disciples. All Jesus did was to call those fishermen to follow him into important and dangerous work. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Let's go fishing for some people to live with us there. 4 among them. 4 among them said, "Yes, yes, we will follow you." Now, I don't understand why the disciples decided to follow after this man. The text seems completely uninterested in explaining the motivations within these 4 fishermen for following after Jesus. And quite frankly, I don't think that this story is calling out for understanding or explanation of an individual person's motives for deciding to follow after God's call in their lives. I don't think this is a story about explanation. I think this is a story that calls out for imitation. It calls out for imitation. The story calls for us to be like the disciples. That is, after all, what Christian discipleship means. Christian discipleship means trying to be like the disciples. That's all. Trying to be like the disciples. Now, that's not a complicated idea, though simple and easy are not always the same thing. To run a marathon is a simple thing. It means running 26 miles in a row. It's simple, but that doesn't make it easy. Discipleship. Discipleship is a simple idea. In this case, it means that when God calls you to take up important and dangerous work, work that would change your whole life along with the world, work that would mean leaving behind old ways of living and learning new pathways in life, that would mean risking everything that you know with no assurances of success and no explanation as to why you must be the one to do it, that's discipleship. And discipleship means that when God calls you, you say, "Yes, yes, I will follow you." It is a simple idea. But that doesn't make it easy. Jesus called the disciples one by one and two by two, and together they set out to prove that the world did not have to be the way that it was. And they proved it. They proved it by actually living that way themselves. They were living the kingdom of heaven into being, and they were calling others to live that way of life too. Jesus and the disciples proved that the poor need not live in humiliation, and they proved it by treating the poor with dignity equal to any other. Jesus and the disciples proved that women and children did not need to be treated as if they were the property of men, and they did so by welcoming children with open arms and placing women into positions of authority within the movement. They were living all day long. They were living all day long like the kingdom of heaven was where they lay their heads at night. And by doing that, they were undermining the unjust kingdom of Herod Jr. at its very foundations. They were demonstrating, they were proving with their lives the truth of the first and most fundamental thing that people must believe in order to change anything about the world. They must believe that this isn't the way things have to be. This isn't how things have to be. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And if we would seek to be disciples of Jesus, if we would seek to be like the disciples, then we must say yes to God's call in our lives and prove by our living that the world does not have to be like this. Must it be the case? Must it be the case that humanity should destroy our environment? Or is a different way of living possible? Must it be the case that the elderly and infirm should be consigned to loneliness and irrelevancy, warehoused out of view? Must this be the case? Or is a different way of living possible? Must it be the case that hundreds of our brothers and sisters will sleep on the cold streets of Boston tonight, or that thousands should rot in prison in America tonight, or that millions live in fear of war tonight, or billions go without enough to eat tonight? Must this be so? Is this the way the world must be? Or is a different way of living possible? Kingdom of heaven is at hand. And it is the work of Christian disciples to prove that the world can be different, to prove it by living all day long, by living all day long like the kingdom of heaven is where we lay our heads at night. All Christians are called to discipleship, to being disciples of Jesus, though the work particular to each is not identical. The work that I am called to will be different from the work that you are called to. Some will work for peace, and others will feed the hungry, and others will raise and educate a generation of holy people, and others will lead whole nations. But know that when God calls you, when God calls you to the work of your life, God will not make promises that you will succeed. And God will not tell you when you begin what lies at journey's end. And God will not tell you why you, of all people, must be the one to be at that work. What God will do, what God is doing, is to call you to important and dangerous work, to change the world at its very foundations. And Christian, oh Christian, when God calls you, remember the disciples and say yes